Okay, we're back and we are being recorded, and this is the very first call of the EFT for people and animals. And I really am so glad that all of us are here, and you know, we're going to learn a ton, kind of about ourselves, if nothing else, and certainly become good practitioners with this. I mean, and like anything else, I really believe, you know, that we want to be working on ourselves. I believe that any healing modality or technique that we're using on others is a great opportunity to be using it on ourselves. I've been teaching something called the Scalar Way for about 17 years now, and it's something I do every morning on myself. And sometimes I forget to do EFT on myself, and then something will kind of get to a boiling point, and I'll be like, oh, duh, I can use EFT. But the beauty of the EFT is that, you know, usually it works pretty quickly. And it's funny because I'm about to go into the spring quarter, kind of, I call it, in my program. And we have coming up the Animal Alchemy Weekend, which is always a lot of energy work. And I like to think, especially with the spring, you know, the idea of the renewal with Easter and all of that, like, you know, how can I freshen up the class? I think that every spring. And one of the biggest things I've been thinking about is that there are, and I have a new book coming out called Energy Healing for Animals. So, of course, this has been just a topic on my mind for the last 4 years and putting it into practice. And in the book, I review, like, what is energy and what is energy work and what are kind of the hidden energy systems of the people and animals, like the chakras and the meridian systems. And then in the second half of the book, I go more into the modalities and techniques and things you can do at home or things you need a practitioner for. And I was thinking about some of the modalities that are healing and some of the modalities that are healing. And it sounds so stupid to say it that way, but there are certain things that I think aid healing, and there are certain things that are healing. And I don't like to use the word cure, but I think there's a big fundamental difference, like we already started, you know, kind of the discussion was opened here, about the Reiki being something that, like Sharon can use it on those, the Horde the Mustangs. But it doesn't mean that it's, you know, it seems like it takes a lot and it's calming, and the next day you come back to that challenge. And, you know, Carolyn, I don't know for you, does the hypnosis usually only take like 1 to 3 times when it's really going great?
Yes, I would say my experience has been the same as Sharon's. First of all, with the Reiki, we get great results. We are able to assist in helping the animals to feel more calm, more relaxed in the environment. But I just feel as though we need to expand outward and find other things to help these animals, because their issues are not necessarily getting better with the Reiki. And as a hypnotherapist, I toy around with working with them just like I would with clients, and I've had some amazing results with that. But I'm just really looking for that next thing. And I really, when I saw your email again, I was like, wow, this is incredible.
Yeah, so the big thing I want to, you know, point out is that this is one of those things that does have significant results if you allow it to. You know, it's not if you allow it to. It does have significant results. Sometimes it doesn't work, but you're going to know pretty quickly if it's going to work or not. And the other thing about it is it's something you can do with and for the animal and with and for the humans. And I was on a radio show yesterday, and it was really pretty fun to work with the host because she and I had been in a big EFT program years ago together. And she's a psychologist down in Orange County, actually Wendy's friend. So what was fun is on the show she said that, you know, she's got this two-year-old dachshund that has had, and this is just a perfect example of where this can really work. So she had listened to my free call a few weeks ago. So her little dog can be a little bit leash aggressive. And for if you don't know what leash aggression means, that on occasion, because the dog is stuck on a leash, they may act out first and be barky and bitey and seem like they're snarling. And usually it can be anything from a sense of territorial sense. It can be from fear. It can be from a number. It can be from a number of things. When you have, so if I were the practitioner there, I would want to look at what the underlying emotion is for that animal. And that's where, you know, this dovetails so well with animal communication, but it doesn't mean you have to be an animal communicator to do this. But we'll do a little bit of communicating in this as the weeks go on. So you look at the underlying emotion of the animal, and so she tapped on her dog and had a significant result one day with the dog, seeing other dogs. The dog was really happy and easygoing with the seeing the other dogs. But then on the radio show yesterday, we talked to, I was talking to her and I said, well, she said, how would you be tapping with me? And I said, well, I'd want to know all the feelings you have about the situation, which you can imagine when you have a naughty dog, you would, not a naughty dog, but an annoying habit. I mean, annoying was the word she used. So we really tapped with her then on the radio show, and I'm going to actually find the link today and put it up on Facebook, and I'll put it in the Facebook group. Tapped with her about what her feelings were when this happened. So you can imagine for the human in this situation, you've got, in her situation, she had prior to this dog the perfect dog, right? So suddenly, we didn't necessarily tap on this, but a lot of times someone can feel badly if they didn't have, if they had that perfect dog and suddenly now they have this problem, it can be embarrassing. It can feel like a failure. So you can look at all those emotions that the human would have with regard to their animal. And then the next thing is the final, you might then do a final round of tapping with the animal just to kind of solidify that both of you, or you could do it with both the person and animal, but really just solidify that the, how much the new program can be integrated into their body, mind, and spirit, so to speak. So when you have that sort of situation, you've got not just the animal's challenge. You're going to generally have some people feelings too. So this is more of a healing modality than something that helps, that that is healing. And then they know that sounds so stupid, but there are things out there like healing touch for animals, Reiki, certain, you know, types of things that, you know, you might see them calm. And while it takes calmness to allow the body to heal or to shift or the neural pathways to change, ultimately, it isn't, like you, many of you are saying, it isn't enough because you're not seeing the big shift. And I personally, you know, like things that I want to see a shift. excuse me. So I want to see a big shift. And one, you know, for me, of course, animal communication is like my favorite modality of all. And I call it a modality because sometimes when an animal just gets its story off the off their chest, they have a significant shift. Like a primate I met the other day, my new boyfriend, I call him, Wendy. Wendy, do you want to tell what happened with my little friend?
No, you Kirchick. Tell.
Well, just he was full of anxiety, and he had been apparently pretty aggressive with some of the other some of his friends, and so he was in a pretty isolated situation, and he was across the way from another male who they kind of had stare downs and somewhat aggressive stare downs, and they weren't even the same species, so it would be that, you know, would not be as common in the wild. So it's a very uncomfortable situation, and just having his little animal communication session and really being able to talk, he really significantly calmed down right in front of us and was a little more social than he'd been. And I went back and visited him a couple of days later and took pictures of him because he's so cute, took more pictures, and he was really like with his feet up and in a very, I mean, Wendy would be able to tell calming signals better than I can, but really calm, calmer. I mean, you know, still a ways to go, but, you know, it's a start.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and that, you know, and that's animal communication. And so to me, if I don't get that kind of shift from animal communication and there still needs to be a big shift, then I pull my next level of tools out. And my next level of tools is my two favorite energetic are something called scalar wave and then EFT. And where I would differentiate is that the scalar wave would be something I would do. It's more of a silent sort of thing that you do in much in the same way you would do a Reiki. I have had significant results in the past on changing the energy field and really actually having blood work change and going in and almost doing like a psychic surgery sort of thing. But I do that more for illnesses or challenges that way. But, and then when it comes to, and it's not that I don't use EFT for that. I do, because there may be belief systems about getting better. And then the EFT I tend to use more for behavioral things and some wellness challenges. And, the EFT is very, it's either going to work or it's not. And the animal will shift. And then, it's, as I said, sometimes you've really got to shift to help the human's belief system. So that's where this is just an ideal little modality to be working. And so does anyone have any questions so far? Okay, now I have a question for you guys. I just want to kind of throw this out there for right now. If any of you have, you know, I want to go through what we've got going in the weeks to come. We have fear for the human. So let's say if the human had a horse accident, or they have been bitten by a dog that they have to deal with, or they have an aggressive dog, and it really freaks them out that their own dog is going outside and, you know, going after the neighbor's dogs, things like that. Does anyone have one of those situations? Because that would be ideal to use someone from here, but I can always find another student or a volunteer, you know, a client, something like that. Does anyone want to have anything, any sort of trauma? Yes.
I have something, and I don't know if it would be good or not, but my dog, when with other dogs, Lily is my dog, she tends to pick up a toy and immediately growl at other dogs. And last night, actually, we were at home. It was only the two of us. And she will pick up a bone, she'll sit next to me, and then she'll start her growling at me. And it's for attention. And I had to go through, I had to do a treat exchange. She went through three of her bones, and the bones eventually went in timeout. And I just want her to stop that behavior. And I don't know if something else is happening, if she's just trying to get my attention or what. But it seems that growling behavior, I don't know if this would help or not.
Yeah, that would be, okay, so that's more when we get to, I think, the behavior. But and are you traumatized by it?
No, it just drives me crazy.
Okay,
we're
going to put that in the behavior week.
And then when we're with the other Vishlas, you know, the Vishla group, she does it with other people's toys, and other people, dog owners, are very uncomfortable with her.
Okay, that's a great one we can work on.
Okay.
Does anyone else have any challenges that they want to address?
Joan, this is Sharon.
Yes.
I actually do have one. I think it was like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago now. My two-year-old grandson stumbled and fell on my sleeping dog, who is pretty, he's old and he's sore and stuff, and he was in a dead sleep. And before I could move 3 feet away to grab him, the dog woke up and went at him three times, and we ended up in the hospital with, he just missed both eyes, you know, cracked open the top of his skull. He had several bites. And we've always kept him separate, my grandson separate. I take care of him three times a week. We've always kept him separate from Docker because, like I said, he's older and he just doesn't have the tolerance level anymore. But what's happened to me is now, my grandson is really bonded to our Roddy, who we haven't had her quite a year. She's going to be four. I'm not sure what her issues were before. She has a few issues, but they are buddy-buddy normally. But I find now that I am, like, holding my breath when he's around her, when he goes snuggle up against her. I almost have a panic attack.
Okay.
You know, I want to keep her separate from him also, but at the same time, it's not fair because they both sit on opposite sides of the gate. She does tend to, like, do a low growl at him once in a while if he gets a little too aggressive. But I'm the one that's more freaked out than anybody else about it.
Okay, that's a great one for the fear for the human. We will do that next. And, yeah, so you'll be the first round of tapping. Because you understand, like, if we look at the energy field of, I mean, animals are signaling forever off of feelings. That's what makes them think a thought, right? Their go-to is feelings. So if your mm-hmm. field of energy has any sort of fear in it, you're that's instantly translated into
Right.
And then they start tracking your thoughts, and, you know, that's the alarm or the alert for them to start looking at what you're thinking about.
Right.
So, all right. That's awesome. And thank you for, you know, this is going to be a really intimate group, and, you know, it's not always so easy sometimes to share these things, but this is really a great, you know, we have a bunch of really amazing healers on the call, and, you know, I, as Dana and Paula can tell you from my big group, and Katie can probably even say from my home study course, that safety, emotional safety, and this is an emotional safety zone, and work very hard to, you know, create a space. And I still work that hard. Actually, I just really attract great people. So, but attract a space where we can, you know, be supportive and safe with each other. So that's a great thing to be working on. Okay. Does anyone else have any fears or naughty behaviors that drive you crazy, or even an illness or wellness challenge?
Joan, this is Karen.
Yes. Hi.
I have a poodle that will not walk on my floors, or more correctly, she'll only walk on certain squares of my floors, and the squares that she'll walk on changes frequently enough that it kind of makes our life miserable and her life miserable.
It's a dog or a cat?
It's a dog.
Okay.
It's a dog, and we've gone through all the usual, you know, we've gotten her toenails real short. We've, you know, tried rugs and runners. I mean, we've tried all the stuff that the vets have suggested. So I don't really consider it naughty. I consider it more an anxious behavior.
Okay. And you know what? If we don't have a dog that is in the fear category, we might switch that out for then the anxiety.
Okay.
Next, so then the first week of tapping will be Sharon, and then maybe then Karen. It would be, you know, we can look at that, and then Wendy for the behavior. And as I said, we will. I've got plenty of people to call in, and I don't know if you have gotten a chance, any of you have gotten a chance, but there's in that book, the little PDF that went out, there's a ton of like videos and audios and lots of sessions I've done where what I do is if someone can't afford a session and they really have a big challenge, I frequently use, you know, we'll do it for educational purposes. So I've got a ton of things you can listen to in there for examples of different EFT situations. Okay, so that's a great place to start. And if anybody has wellness or challenge, heartbreaking diagnosis, that sort of thing, you know, that's something else we can work on.
John?
Yes.
This is Carolyn in Santa Barbara.
Yes.
There is a shelter dog that has been having seizures twice a day that I do have access to. They're trying to raise money in the community to have a special test done because the vet is unable to figure out what's causing the seizures. He's a year old, and he's a German Shepherd. And I don't know if this would work or not as far as working with the human, but there's some very young shelter staff there that were quite traumatized last time we were there by watching the seizure occur because they couldn't get to him, and he was in the yard, and he, as the seizure occurred, he went and laid down, and he began banging his head against the rocks.
Oh,
yeah. So he was very bloody. And anyway, one of the young girls was crying, and it was a very, very heartbreaking situation.
Yeah, when are they, so he's not epileptic, this dog?
No, the vet has ruled that out. They just cannot figure out what's going on.
So do you have a good, I'll tell you, I mean, I just, right now I can almost hardly breathe. I would be looking at the occiput, and there's something that almost strangles, cuts the air supply off in that neck and head.
Okay.
And I would be looking for a chiropractor, and I would get that dog on massive magnesium. I have actually a really interesting story. I went to the Kentucky Derby and talked to all the horses for MSNBC before the race, and there's a horse trainer, which I don't know if Katie knows horse trainers there in Kentucky, but there's a very famous horse trainer named Nick Zito. And so Nick Zito is, you know, like a lot of racetrack people, super, super, super superstitious. And so when he heard that an animal communicator was there, he, like, battened down the hatches. He, like, covered his whole barn. He didn't want me anywhere near his horses. And so later on, you know, I ended up talking to the horse later on, anyway, and it all ended up, you know, airing that year. And MSNBC at the time had a sports writer that is just obsessed with the Kentucky Derby, and so he's the one that got me, you know, sent me out there with him. So anyway, cut to, you know, probably 6 years later, I'm living down in South Florida, and I have a horse trainer, and he says, yeah, I want you to meet Kim Zito. She rescues all of her husband's horses. You might know of his her husband. His name is Nick Zito. I'm like, oh, yeah, I know who he is. And so I get out there, and I meet Kim, and she's lovely and rescues a ton. You know, she has a big thoroughbred rescue, actually, there in Kentucky, and I'm always threatening to come out and talk to all the horses there. And they actually wanted me to come out and do an event, so maybe one day I'll end up back in Kentucky. So anyway, I end up talking to Kim, and I tell her the story, and she just thinks it's funny that her husband was so superstitious. And meanwhile, you know, I continued over the years to talk to her horses. And so one day she brought me both of her dogs, and she said, this one is Nick's dog, and he has the worst seizures on the planet, and we've considered putting him down. And so I, you know, and they knew it wasn't epileptic. And so I ended up working, doing just a little bit of cranial, a little bit of acupressure on the dog, and got her to get the dog on magnesium. And the dog never had a seizure again. And Nick Zito had to admit that he was grateful for the animal communicator. I love those stories that come full circle. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you can do physically, because my guess is that in stress, he goes back, his cranial bones go back into a place where he almost can't breathe and he seizes out. I could be wrong. And, you know, I think you should look at every angle with this German Shepherd, Carolyn, but I would guess that there's something physical going on with the stress, and the magnesium would kind of soften the emotion and soften the muscles, because I think he gets locked into. And my guess is also he might have some neurological stuff already in his hind end, even though he's really young.
Okay.
Does he walk funny?
A little bit, yes. I haven't seen him walk a whole lot. Usually he came up, and as soon as we arrived, he had just had the seizure. He was pretty bloodied. They got him back into his area, and he just looked at us like, oh, thank you so much. And he just laid down and just took in a lot of Reiki. Just was very sad.
Yeah. And, you know, I also think, when, you know, this is again one of those things where it's like Reiki can be healing, but you want that thing that's going to be the healing thing, the ticket. And I think in this situation, we might try EFT even with him, but I would really also be looking at some physical therapy to unhook. But that would be great.
Okay. Thank you, Joan. I really appreciate that.
Okay. Does anyone else have anything before I start talking again? Anything else that anybody that might be a good candidate for us working on in this class?
Joan, this is Paula.
Yes.
I always offer up Maggie because we're still going through a lot of stuff with her now. She's having a lot of pain that she's having trouble jumping and getting up on things. And she also has a really bad tooth, but I don't really want to have her go under anesthesia at 14. So anything about that would be wonderful.
You know, that's where I'm glad that you mentioned that about the dynamite. I would get the trace minerals right away, and you could put that in the food, and that works like a natural antibiotic. You wouldn't want to put that in her mouth straight up because it would appear like she's rabid. I put it in a cat's mouth one time and she foamed for like a half hour. But
well, hopefully she didn't be so finicky, but hopefully it doesn't have too much of a taste. But that's why I wanted to talk to you about the dime, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing would be colloidal silver doesn't have a terrible taste, but it might not work as fast as the trace minerals. But, yeah, okay, so we've got some good candidates, and maybe anybody that's listening to the recording later will email me with anything they want to work on. And also, you know, if we don't get to your animal and you have something going on, I do, in the, you know, one of the bonuses I didn't probably mention is that I'll do a round of tapping with you for something, you know, whether it's something related to your animal or not, because I like to, you know, I like everybody to have an experience after a class like this. So, okay. And, all right, so I wanted to talk a little bit about, did anyone see the videos that are in the little booklet?
Not yet.
Okay. So, I go over all the points for the animals in those videos, and those are available through that little booklet. Did anybody not get the book? Okay. I go through the points there, but I'll just go ahead and review those for a few minutes. So, you know, for the people, it's, you know, inside of the eye, outside of the eye, under the nose, between the nose and the lip, under the lips, between the bottom of the chin and the lips, on the collarbone. Now, there is a point that's in the armpit that a lot of people do, but I bypass that, and I'll talk about that in a second. And then the top of the head. And I talk about this a little bit in the video, but I wanted to just kind of review why I do what I do. So I don't, a lot of times I'm working on horses, and, you know, I think there's a new video, might not be in there, but I'll make sure that you guys get it. I just did this video a little bit ago. A lot of times, and Sharon, you might relate to this with the Mustangs you're working on. If you've got an issue that's behavioral, you frequently have somebody who's in a bit of fight or flight. And so to reach back and get that kind of armpit point on a horse might undo all the work you've just done in helping them feel safe. And even with a dog that's maybe not trusting the situation, getting back to that armpit spot might be might take away a little bit of the trust. Also on horses, a lot of times they can be ulcery, so that point is a, you know, they think you're going to do something like put a saddle on, and you're automatically sending a certain amount, you know, sending stress signals back into their system. So, and with dogs and cats, it could instantly go into fight or flight. I want to be right in front of them, right there with them, so that they're looking at me and they're trusting me and I'm not doing anything weird. It's already weird that I'm tapping on their head. And the other thing, and I talk about this in the video, is if you've got a dog that's had, okay, I'm going to just back up. When I do animal communication for a dog that has a tendency toward aggression, whether it's aggression toward people or other dogs or any animal, there's three things I do I check in about. One is I see if there's any past experience that may have caused this. So did they get attacked by another dog and then therefore they're attacking dogs or cats? The second thing I check in on is this a thyroid issue? And then the third thing I check in is this a cranial bone? Was there an old head injury issue? Now, if it's a head injury issue, and you want to be very mindful of tapping on a dog, because you could really be triggering something in that situation. And so you might modify those points, and even ask if you're, not the big animal communicator, but just in general, wanting to check in with the human, just saying, is your dog okay touching him on the head? Then you can use those points. So you have two options at that point when you're dealing with an aggressive dog. One would be, you might consider just tapping down the spine, because each of these acupressure points are connected to the meridian, and each meridian is connected to an organ system, and each organ system has an emotional component to it. So each of these points is attached to an energetic emotional component. Along the spine is what is called the bladder meridian, and the bladder meridian contains association points to each of those organs. So you can still manage to get into the organ system, into that emotional system on the spine. So that might be a great alternative for you if you can't touch the head. Your other option, if you can't touch the head, is to surrogate tap on yourself on behalf of the animal. Now, I am someone to be more inclined to, if I can, I'm going to tap on the animal. I don't surrogate tap personally unless I'm sitting here in the Seattle area and on the phone with someone in Lake Worth, Florida. But even so, even when I'm sitting here surrogate tapping on myself on behalf of a cat in that area, I am having the person do the tapping on the animal as well. So I personally don't end up doing a lot of surrogate tapping, because tapping is, somehow the animal's getting touched. And that, to me, is an important thing, because I really think animals, even more than people, just because they don't have doubt in the same way we do. They might have mistrust, but they don't have doubt. And I'm not going to say that universally, but in general, they don't have doubt. They might mistrust something they were supposed to do, but they aren't going to doubt. They don't doubt energy work. They don't doubt whether acupuncture works. They don't doubt whether EFT works. They don't doubt that they have these things. They are very readily accepting of this work. And we see that time and time again with things like Reiki. Now, when you also are looking at the idea that whatever fear or anxiety or mistrust, any of those kind of issues that are underlying with the behavioral issues, those big feelings that are driving the bad or naughty behavior, not only are they an emotional thing, but they live in the body. And so that's where, when you're dealing with something like a big anxiety, or I'm thinking of those Mustangs you're talking about, or Carolyn, maybe some of the animals that are coming into the shelter that are, really afraid or don't understand or are really, really sad, that those feelings are living in the body. So when we're able to take them out of the body, we have a pretty good chance of helping them shift the situation. And that, I really try to make that differentiation in my new book about, why we want to do body work that has an energetic component and energy work. And many of the things that have energetic components are things like acupuncture or acupressure. And so by working on these acupressure points, we have a shot at really moving this out of their system. One of the things that I might mention is that animals are much more readily available to moving it out of their system and not looking back. And it's the human that tends to hang on to that emotion for them. Like we go, oh, it's a rescue. Oh, I got the dog because the neighbor died. Oh, you know, we always tell that story. And the more we tell that story, the more we're compounding the situation. So that's another reason then to think about tapping with the human, because there is no great anything that's going to occur if you continue to retell the story. I have a dog here that is a black lab that had was the most terrified dog on the planet. And this was about right before my first book came out. And I was about to have a weekend workshop. And, you know, there were like so many people signed up. It was huge, you know, which will start happening again as my new book comes out. Everybody will be all signing up for everything. And so I had this terrified dog, and I had a bunch of people coming. I had like 4 months to 3 months to get her to a point where she wasn't, you know, and the one thing about a terrified dog is that they can appear terrifying out of their terror, even though they're just scared. But nobody stops and says, oh, that's fear aggression. It looked terrible. And so then I got her calm. I told her she was the greeter. It took, you know, months to work on from a behavioral and energetic and a bodywork standpoint. But now she's like one of the, you know, she's a rock star in my program. And one of the big things I did not do is didn't let her be part of the animal communication program here like all my other animals are, for a couple of years, because I wanted that story so far gone that it wasn't something that was going to come up, because I didn't need every time, you know, 20 people come to my house and take an animal communication class for her to relive that story. So nobody ever noticed that we never talked to her in weekend workshops, but I waited a long time because I didn't want other people trapping her or compounding that situation. And so, she's, you know, had the most traumatic of my animals' background. And so, again, it was a long time before she was integrated into the program, whereas everybody else, you know, if you're born and if you're 3 months old, you're teaching. That's just the rule here. But so, you know, what you, as a practitioner, you might really be wanting to help people let go of that story that they're hanging on to about their animal. And, you know, I tell a little story about I went to this barn to go talk to this horse. And as I walked in, the woman said, okay, I'm so glad you're here. I've got to tell you about my horse. Blah, 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 blah. And I kept saying, okay, I'm going to get quiet. Talk to your horse now. And she's like, oh, and another thing, la, 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 la. So she would just tell story after story. So when I finally got quiet and connected with the horse, some of those stories were relevant to the challenges she was having, and some of those stories were not. But I thought, how do I get through to this woman that she doesn't need to be telling me stories? So finally I said to her, look, how long have you been married? And she said, I've been married about 6 months. I said, okay, how would you feel if you walked into a restaurant to go meet your new husband's old friends, and he introduced you as, this is my new wife. She had the worst upbringing. And she started drinking way too much in college. But I think she'll behave tonight. Right? That's how we introduce our dogs at the dog park. That's how we, when people come in, it's like, oh, my cat's a scaredy cat. Oh, my cat is a blah, blah, blah. So sometimes we lead with a story. So one of our jobs as a practitioner is to help people break up that story. And that's why, you know, when you can see that when you're questioning whether you should be tapping on the animal or the human, tapping on the animal is, I think, pretty fun in general and is really an amazing experience. But sometimes if you can see that someone, and I'm all about, you know, being gentle and delicate and compassionate, and not like, oh, my God, you're hanging on to a story, lady. But, you know, just saying, hey, you know, it'd be really great if we can unhook this a little for you because you seem pretty locked into the story. And that, you know, so you always want to just be kind of checking in to see, you know, how much the person is invested in this and how much the animal is invested in it. Because a lot of behaviors can shift if the person is really open to shifting it. And I'm not saying that the person has to be 150% on board. There's times when it's still going to work, even though despite the person's need to hang on to the story, right? Like, now I still tell that story about Isabella because she is part of the teaching program. I can tell that story without her reverting back to that behavior. But, you know, protection for her, and she's a, I don't know if you guys had the picture of the dog that I'm tapping on. She's the dog that I'm tapping on in the picture. She's my little black lab. And I frequently, when I'm doing tapping from here on an animal that's, you know, obviously on the phone, I will have the person tap on their animal, and I'm frequently tapping on her. So she's gotten a lot of benefits from the, she gets tapped on all the time, in other words. But so before I talk about scripting, does anyone have any questions so far? Okay. So there's two things that in that book, Lit, I talk about feelings, and I think I'm going to create some worksheets because people in the last class had some trouble, and we kind of made some ideas, and they didn't have trouble. They actually got it, and they did some homework, and I'll be setting up homework with you guys as we go along. But one of the things that I look at is for the animal script, a lot of times I am looking at what happens in the animal communication session. So, for example, if, let's take the situation with that radio host yesterday, Dr. Linda, that Wendy knows. If I had talked to her dog, and I had gotten a sense of why the dog was a little bit protective on the leash, I might have found out that, like, I can't remember. I know that the dog was kept in the crate for a really long time. So I would be talking to, in the communication with the dog, getting a sense from the dog what those underlying emotions are. Like, is it a protective because she's really unsure outside, all of those things. That's where I would start with my script. I might open that up with, even though I'm out of my comfort zone when I go outside, I love and accept myself. Even though I really don't know what I'm doing when I'm outside, I love and accept myself. So I would do the setup phrase very simply with that dog. And then I tend to make elaborate scripts, but even if you just tapped on the dog, like, I feel I should protect. I should protect. I'm supposed to protect. You know, you could do something on each of the tapping spots very simply, and then you can come back around to a more positive. I like to end the script always with the positive outcome. So I frequently ask the person, in a perfect world, what would this behavior be? So I can imagine that Dr. Linda would say, in a perfect world, I would walk down the street and Rosie would just have all sorts of friends. So I might end that script with, I have friends, I have friends, I have friends. Everywhere I go, I have friends. I have people friends, I have squirrel friends, I have human friends. And so that's an example of something I might do with that dog that minute. And again, I'm getting the script from the animal communication session. But even if you sat down with somebody and said, you know, okay, what would you like to tap on? And they said, well, my dog is leash aggressive. And I know she came from a shelter where she was in a crate for way too long. And before that, she was in four homes. So that would be, again, like still the same setup. It would, whether you were an animal communicator or not, you can still go through the, I'm not sure what to do when I'm outside, so I think I'll protect. I'm not sure what my job is, you know. I'm out of my comfort zone. This is scary. So things like that. So, again, you're going to the primary emotion that would be underlying any situation, and then you're going to tap on the animal that way with, you know, trying to release those underlying insecurities. And I never like to use the term negative emotions because I don't think emotions are negative. I think that we have to have things like anger to fuel change. I think that we have to have fear to know, you know, what it is to be okay. So, you know, all of these, I think that they just kind of have, they all have a place, but we want to move some of them that aren't as productive for us at the time. And it's not productive for Rosie to feel afraid outside. But what we discovered on the radio show yesterday was that originally Linda had been afraid of a coyote getting her dog when she went out on a walk. And so it was fascinating because that was part of the thing we discovered in the tapping, that she was actually accidentally setting up for Rosie to be on high alert. But we discovered that through the tapping. So sometimes you're going to get to a lot of the stuff with the human from the tapping. You'll get to an even deeper sense. And that's why a lot of times I will set up three sessions, if one for the animal, one for the person, and then that third one, if you discover something else, or if the person's really motivated to tap on themselves, then I don't have to do it. But a lot of times people want the help. So that is basically where I get the script for the animal. Now with the human, again, I'm going to ask just some simple questions. You know, how do you feel when your dog does this? How do you feel? I mean, like, Wendy, when your dog does this thing with the Vizsla Club, how do you feel when your dog starts growling at other people's dogs?
Embarrassed.
Yeah. And probably frustrated.
Yes.
And probably like, oh, my God, I can deal with great apes, and I can't even deal with the dog?
Well, I know that she is always wants to be the boss of everyone.
Yeah. So there's so many feelings that you would have even about, like, there's sometimes when it's okay that I don't care that you're the boss, but right now I don't need you to be doing this. You don't need to show everybody this.
Right.
So there's a million feelings that you're going to have, you know, so there's so many feelings that you have about all of it, that's where we start to create the script.
Okay.
For the human. It's like, I'm embarrassed, I can't believe she's doing this again, she has to be in control, it drives me crazy that she wants control. Now, one of the things I might ask is for Wendy, is there a time in your history when someone, probably 0 through 10, when you were, you know, up until about age 10, did you have a sibling or somebody that always needed to be in control?
Yes.
Yeah. So you're used to this.
Yes.
And so that's one of those things that I would start to play with how familiar this is. And, oh, my God, I can't believe I have this with a dog.
Yes.
So that's where a lot of times when I hear this situation, I might ask, is this a familiar feeling? And I just had a feeling that she had somebody in her youth that was probably needed control. And so you might ask about, is this a familiar feeling for the person? You might ask, when they start to answer these questions, you might ask, here's something, I know, I don't think this is the case with Wendy, but I think there's a lot of times, I'll give you an example, that there's a secondary gain. And so here's a good example. I probably tell this story in the booklet, but I had a client who had a horse who has chronic lameness, and the horse had been diagnosed with something called navicular. So the horse wasn't, there's potential for that horse to never be ridden again, and there was potential for the horse to degenerate. Well, through a number of healing modalities, we actually cleared up the navicular to the point where the vet had, like, and I'll say this in air quotes, undiagnosed the navicular disease. But what happened was the horse still had a little bit of lameness, and I just had a feeling that this was more related to the human than the animal. So as I was asking questions to set up my script, I finally said to her, this is what I call secondary gain, what are you benefiting from having, how are you benefiting from having a lame horse? You know, so sometimes, and we're all guilty of this, when we have that negative thing, we can be running an old tape. We can be running something that we're not even conscious that we're doing. So in her situation, she was used to having somebody say, oh, Julia, you poor thing. So she could go to work and be like, yeah, my horse is lame again. I didn't get to ride. I mean, does anyone recognize that tape?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's the sort of thing where when we're used to having a challenge and it's habitual, we tend to, you know, get a benefit from it. And so one of the things when you're creating a script with someone is there some way that you're benefiting from having your horse, having your dog be aggressive? Now, what's fascinating is in the last class that I did, we had a gal that had two dogs that were fighting. She got them together for a while, but now they continue to fight. But through the tapping, they did get to play together for a few weeks, and then some other stuff broke down, and she's had to keep them separated again. But this is a gal who's very isolated and very not isolated. I mean, she works at home. She works for herself. She's in a corporate job, but she gets to do it from home. She's more of a consultant. She likes being an introvert. And so there was a benefit in having this dog that doesn't, that is not available in the public world, because to some degree she's not. And it's in, I wasn't able to look at it, but I just noticed that she happened to post a little video today of that dog out in public on that last class that I did, that private Facebook group. So she's coming out of it, you know what I mean? She's getting that dog out a little more and doing stuff with him in a way that she hadn't before this class. So, you know, people benefit in weird ways. I remember years ago, I didn't tap with this woman, but I knew an acupuncturist who had a very aggressive dog. And he was, I talk about it in my first book, Communication with All Life. He was someone that was very, so aggressive. And the household was very, 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 very full of grief. She had lost both of her parents in about a 5-year span. She moved back into the family house to take care of both of the parents and still maintained her acupuncture practice in Denver. And the dog had been very protective of each of the parents. And then when each of them died, there was no way she could take him out on a walk. And in a lot of ways, he became what I called her private dog, because she couldn't go out into the world with her grief, and yet she could share that with him at home. So, you know, there's all sorts of benefits that aren't necessarily, and I'm saying air quotes, negative. But if that person wants to make a change with that animal, then we've got to recognize those secondary benefits. So those are some of the things that you want to be looking for with the human. You know, even dogs would get a secondary benefit. Sometimes it's more fun to get in trouble just because at least you're getting attention than not. So, you know, you want to just be looking around for, is this the two biggest things to me? Well, actually, I'll tell you a third. But so you want to be looking for, is this familiar? Is this a familiar feeling for the person? Are they benefiting from this, air quotes, negative situation? And then the third thing I guess I would ask the person is, does this show up somewhere in your body? Like, well, use you again, Wendy. When you have your dog growl at your friend's dogs because your dog has the toy, is there somewhere in your body that you feel that?
Yes. My stomach.
Where is it? Yeah.
In my stomach.
Yeah. So I would do the script pretty much. You know, I would bring in the physical, the emotional, and then the familiar with that. Does anyone have any questions? No questions? So, am I that clear?
You said bring in physical, familiar, and emotional.
What is the familiar then? Would that be the secondary benefit?
No, the familiar would be like I was saying, so when I asked Wendy about her dog, she said that the dog always needs to be in control. And I said, is there some time in your life, 0 through 10, that somebody, a sibling, had to be in control? And she said yes.
Okay.
Because the reason that that's important is that that's, you know, for some people to have someone come in and be in control, if you've never had that, that would be bristling and you would take care of it instantly, right? You'd be like, at first,
yes.
Like, what? I can't do this. Whereas someone who's had that, there's almost like a resignation, like, oh, God, here, I've got this again, because it's familiar.
Mm-hmm.
So I have an idea. We'll do a little mini round here with Wendy. We'll go more into detail and really break it down in the next, you know, 6 weeks, 6 classes. But, okay, so what's your dog's name? And we may use you again in a bigger way, but we may get some bit of a shift here. Well, we'll probably use your dog. Okay, so what is your dog's name?
Lily.
Lily, and how old is Lily?
She just turned 4.
And how long have you had her?
4 years.
And did you get her from a breeder?
Yes.
Okay. And when you, did she exhibit any of this at the breeder?
No.
Okay. So I want to really make this clear for you guys. I'm going to do this for Wendy about her feelings about this. This is not a deep dive into what anything about Lily. I just wanted to kind of get this clear. Okay. So when Lily growls at you, how with the bone, how do you feel?
At first I feel, oh, she's doing this again, and I ignore her. And then after she keeps trying this, after 20 minutes to half an hour, she sits next to me with the bone still in her mouth. And if she keeps doing it, and then she runs off the couch and then comes back like 6 times, then I finally do a trade. I finally will do a trade with something else and then put the bone in timeout. But I tried the ignoring technique, and if that doesn't work, then I have to switch to the taking it from her with a treat, which probably is not the right thing to do, because then she knows if I press on, then I'll get a treat. And then she'll find a different... Then she'll find it another...
Okay. And then when she growls at your friends, dogs, how do you feel?
Embarrassed, frustrated with her, because I don't want her to be doing that, because they get upset because they feel that their dogs are going to learn that behavior. And I've even thought I shouldn't be taking her to the group. And this last time, a couple days ago, I thought, well, maybe I need to start training again with the treats, like when she was a puppy. She'll stop that behavior.
And so again, did you, when I asked, you know, did you have anyone in your family, like a sibling, that you felt this feeling with? And you said yes, that she needs to be in control. And who was that?
My older sister and my mother.
And is your sister still controlling in your life?
No, not my life. My parents' life now.
Transferred it.
No, I don't go over there very often, because if it gets crazy, I leave.
Okay. And when she needed control, and how did you feel?
My sister or my mother?
Your sister.
I was that person that would be very quiet and wanted to be the good daughter. So I would not do anything that was bad. I would just ingest it. And I was always good.
So getting after your dog would not be comfortable, correct?
That's correct. I mean, I can do training, but I am I'm not aggressive whatsoever with her. I don't believe in that.
No. No, and you don't have to, but you could still be firm.
Yes. Well, there are times when I'm very good at that. My husband is not, but I'm very good at that.
Yeah, and then that's a problem, because sometimes when you live with a litter mate, it would be really uncomfortable to be the bitch, right?
Yes, and I am.
Okay. And in a perfect world, and again, that's what I always ask people, in a perfect world, you would just go to these Vizsla meetups and have fun with your friends?
I would go to the meetups, and Lily would play with the other dogs and not be so focused on control over what she has.
And again, so in animal communication, we wouldn't want to use those terms, that Lily would not be focused on being in control, because the mind doesn't know the difference between not and would. So we would say Lily would joyfully be playing with other dogs. Lily would be playing with other dogs with ease. Lily would be, so we want to reaffirm continuously the positive behavior, the outcome being with ease and effortlessness and fun and joy and, you know, that sort of thing, as opposed to would not. We want to take that word control out of our vocabulary. When it comes to Lily, that word does not exist.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Oh, definitely, yes.
Okay, so are you ready to tap?
I am.
Okay, so I'm going to call out the points just so everybody else can kind of hear where we are. And I'll just have you repeat after me as we go through it. So we'll start with the karate chop point. Even though I can't take Lily anywhere without her needing control.
Even though I can't take Lily anywhere without her needing control.
I love and accept myself.
I love and accept myself.
Even though somehow this is probably my fault.
Even though this is somehow probably my fault.
I'd really love to blame her.
I would really love to blame her.
Because I'm the good girl.
Because I'm a good girl.
And she's a naughty dog.
And she's a naughty dog.
She's a dog that needs a lot of control.
She's a dog that needs a lot of control.
And I love and accept myself.
And I love and accept myself.
Even though sometimes I think I shouldn't even bring her with me.
Sometimes I think I should never even bring her with me.
I honor the choices I'm making.
I honor the choices I'm making.
Okay, so now we're tapping through the points. So we'll start with the inside of the eye. I can't stand it.
I can't stand it.
Outside of the eye. I'm so embarrassed.
I'm so embarrassed.
Under the eye. I am embarrassed.
I'm embarrassed.
Under the nose, I want this dog to be a good girl.
I want this dog to be a good girl.
Under the lips, I'm a good girl. She should be a good girl.
I'm a good girl, and she should be a good girl.
Collarbone, I really get so embarrassed.
I really get so embarrassed.
Top of the head, so embarrassed, and I feel it in my stomach.
So embarrassed, and I feel it in my stomach.
Inside of the eye, my stomach just gets all butterfly. That's a
my verb. My stomach just gets all butterflies.
Outside of the eye, it just, I hate that feeling.
I hate that feeling.
Under the eye, I feel like I am out of control.
I feel like I'm out of control.
Under the nose, I feel really frustrated.
I feel really frustrated.
Under the lips, and everybody around me thinks their dog's going to learn this.
And everybody around me thinks their dog's going to learn this.
Collarbone, it makes me nuts.
It makes me nuts.
Top of the head, because I don't think they're going to learn it.
Because I don't think they're going to learn it.
Inside of the eye, but I don't like them talking about me and my dog that way.
But I don't like them talking about me and my dog that way.
Outside of the eye, it actually deeply hurts me.
It actually deeply hurts me.
Under the eye, because I want to protect Lily.
Because I want to protect Lily.
Under the nose, and yet Lily makes me nuts.
And Lily makes me nuts.
Under the lips. Whenever someone needs control. Did I lose you? Wendy, are you there? Wendy? Okay. Can anyone else hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you.
Okay, Wendy, Did I lose you? All right, I should go look and see if I lost her. Wendy, are you there? All right, well,
I lost you for a second.
Yes, okay, there you are. Okay, so we're let's go to the collarbone. Are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay, whenever somebody needs control.
Whenever anybody, someone needs control.
Top of the head. I just swallow it.
I just swallow it.
Inside of the eye. It just sits in my stomach.
It just sits in my stomach.
Outside of the eye, just a bunch of butterflies.
Just a bunch of butterflies.
Under the eye, and it is really familiar.
And it's really familiar.
Under the nose, it's really uncomfortable for me to be tough.
It's really uncomfortable for me to be tough.
Under the lips. It's really uncomfortable for me to be a bitch.
It's really uncomfortable for me to be a bitch.
Collarbone. And I live with a litter mate for a husband.
And I live with a litter mate for a husband.
Top of the head. And so it's so uncomfortable that I'm supposed to run the show.
And it's so uncomfortable that I'm supposed to run the show.
Inside of the eye. But for Lily's safety.
But for Lily's safety.
Outside of the eye. I'm willing to let this go.
I'm willing to let this go.
Under the eye. I am willing and open.
I'm willing and open.
Under the nose. And available to.
And available to.
Under the lips. The idea that I've got to stand up a little bit here.
The idea that I've got to stand up a little bit here.
Collarbone. In truth, I'm standing up for Lily's safety.
In truth, I'm standing up for Lily's safety.
Top of the head. It's not safe for her or anybody else for her to have control.
It's not safe for her or anyone else to have control.
Inside of the eye. So I'm going to let go of those words.
So I'm going to let go of those words.
Outside of the eye. And I am going to do a little training.
And I'm going to do a little training.
Under the eye. Because at this point she's trained me.
Because at this point she's trained me.
Under the nose. I'm going to work really hard at helping her.
I'm going to work really hard at helping her.
Under the lips. It'll be training.
It'll be training.
Collarbone, a little bit of fun.
A little bit of fun.
Top of the head. And I'm going to really visualize.
And I'm going to really visualize.
Inside of the eye. And expect.
And expect.
Outside of the eye. A really fun and joyful Lily.
A really fun and joyful Lily.
Under the eyes. I am open to having a different experience.
I'm open to having a different experience.
Under the nose. When I see her doing her thing.
When I see her doing her thing.
Outside or under the lips. I'm going to redirect her.
I'm going to redirect her.
Collarbone. And when I feel that thing in my stomach.
And when I feel that thing in my stomach.
Top of the head. I'm going to take a deep breath.
I'm going to take a deep breath.
Inside of the eye. And really allow her to have fun with her friends.
And really allow her to have fun with her friends.
Outside of the eye. Because she needs fun.
Because she needs fun.
Under the eyes. And I need fun.
And I need fun.
Under the nose. I'm really open to fun.
Say it again. I'm sorry.
I am really open to fun.
I'm really open to fun.
Under the lips. Lily and I have fun.
Lily and I have fun.
Collarbone. Fun.
Fun.
Top of the head. Only fun with our friends. Okay, so take a deep breath.
Okay.
It'll be interesting to see how things go. When's your next play date?
Today.
Okay.
In a couple hours.
All right, well, it'll be fun to see how, you know, because your reaction can, or non-reaction, of not getting frustrated and embarrassed, but redirecting quickly and thinking on your feet could really have a big shift and impact for her.
Okay. That would be great.
Does anybody, did anything come up for you in all of that?
For me or everyone else?
For you, and then I'll ask other people.
Yes, because I started laughing to myself. Giggling to myself halfway through it.
That's good. That is really good.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so how about anybody else? Did that, I'll just kind of run through. Karen, what did you think of all that?
I'm here. I think it's always so interesting listening to people go through this because from an objective standpoint, something seems so much clearer than when you're the one who's living with the situation with your animal.
Right.
So, and I'm not saying this in a judgmental way at all because we're all there with our own animals exactly like she was. I think what I noticed the most was how stuck in loops people can get with behaviors in their animals, and they can't really see outside of the box, probably because they're reacting to their own emotional stuff and their thinking shuts down.
Exactly.
So I think that one of the things that excites me most about this whole EFT with animals is how much it's about the people.
I mean, it is the one modality that we get to jump in with both in a compassionate way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. And Sharon, how about for you when you were hearing this? Did anything come up? Any thoughts, feelings, observations, comments?
Nothing came up for me, but I was saying it along with you, only using my own dog. She had that same little issue. I don't know, it almost felt relaxing. Almost
good.
Like just letting go.
Yeah, good. Because that's going to help you too with your grandson and your dog, right? Like the more relaxed you are and the more you start picturing something else, because what happens is, again, when we revisit those old things, that old story, and that we feel it in our body, we don't realize that we're actually sending, it's sort of like sending the dog a text. Hey, you need to pay attention to this. And then we start picturing the old behavior, and they're like, oh, I need to do that. Okay. So when we start to, you know, get it out of our body and our thoughts, then we can have a different outcome with our animal. Good.
Okay. Right.
Okay, and Carolyn?
Actually, quite a few things came up, and Wendy, thank you for sharing that.
Thank you, Wendy.
That was wonderful. I have almost the same situation. I have an older sister, very controlling, is now controlling my mom and my aunt, and who are both in a retirement community here and both not doing very well. And so as Wendy started talking about that, all of a sudden I became very aware that I was sort of holding tension everywhere, and my shoulders were rising, my stomach started to get tight, and I was like, whoa, this is really triggering that for me, because actually in a little while I have to go to a little pre-Easter celebration lunch with everyone. So I was like, I'm going to start tapping. So I was doing the karate chop and doing all the tapping points, because all of a sudden it dawned on me, hello, Carolyn, this is still something you're having. You maybe have not gotten out of your system, and certainly indirectly it's not helping my beautiful boy Malachi, my cat. And so that was really, really powerful. So thank you. I'll do some more karate chopping before I go again.
Good girl. Okay, great. And Paula?
It was very helpful to see how the script was put together, and whether I'll be able to do that on thinking on my feet like that. But I think hearing that really does help a lot. So that was very beneficial.
But, you know, and when you're putting the script together, I mean, I wrote down, I've got two pages of notes, you know. So I tend to do it, I call it a drive-by. I just put all my notes out and I tap and I pace and I just kind of come by and look at another phrase, and I know what I want. The beginning is, you know, she's got a naughty dog, and the end is she's got a really lovely dog. And so, you know, in terms of a beginning and a middle and an end, I've got to get to those feelings she's got around that situation. And in the middle there is why this is either familiar, why this is either a secondary gain, you know, what the hook is for her,
right,
and unhook it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was helpful.
Okay, and Katie? Katie in Kentucky, can you hear me? If you're muted, then can you unmute? Okay. All right. Maybe we lost her somewhere. Dana? All right. Well, somehow we lost two. Maybe you're still muted, Dana? Anyway, and there's going to be a lot of people listening to this later on, and you might share in the private Facebook group. Wendy, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome.
Thank you, Wendy. That was helpful. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Will you be sending this link also in an email to people, Joan, or?
Will I be what?
Will you be sending this recording
yes,
out in a link to the email like you usually do for the class?
Yes, I will. Karen will be doing that later today.
Oh, super. Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, guys. It was really fun.
It was.
Thank you, Joan. This was amazing.
Oh, cool.
So. Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really great. All right.
One question. The radio show that you were on, what was that? Is there a way we can listen to that?
I'm going to find the link. I've got clients this afternoon, but at some point I'll find the link and get that up on Facebook.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Joan, this is Sharon. I have a question.
Yes.
Maybe you answered it and I missed it. Is there a formula to how many, like, rounds you do?
I did not answer that. That's a really great question. There is not. There's not a formula. You know, I've been a phone psychic for over 20 years, so I can kind of feel when someone's starting to shift. And what you would be looking for, this is a great question. If you were sitting with the animal and you started to see, like, the dog or cat or horse start to yawn a lot, or, like, you know, like a horse might kind of blow, if you saw an animal start to pass gas, or in the case of a horse, you know, I mean, a dog or a cat, you wouldn't necessarily want it pooping right in front of you, but a horse might start pooping. You know, what you see the typical signs of an animal processing or relaxing.
Okay.
That's when you know you've got it, when you're sitting in front of them. You might hear the person yawn. I had a sense, I mean, there was a point where I was actually kind of surprised that Wendy didn't laugh out loud, because I could feel that some of this was kind of funny. I mean, it wasn't funny, but, you know, it was like, I just, you know, I can feel that, like, it might feel ridiculous or, oh, my God, this is hilarious. This is actually me. This is what I do. You know, like, sometimes there's that. Sometimes I can hear if somebody's choked up. I can just feel if the energy is starting to shift. So at a certain point, when I'm in that middle point of like, okay, so I'll go back to what I had written down. If I know that the outcome is that my dog would be comfortable and playing and enjoying and it's all fun, that she would be focused on fun, right? Like that would be my outcome. I'm not going to get to that until I know that I've had a shift on all those familiar feelings. And because I could feel her laughing, even though I didn't hear her laughing, and as I said, I was waiting to hear it out loud, I then went ahead and moved into the positive, you know, the outcome, where I want the outcome to be. Does
okay.
that make sense?
It does. Thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, that's where, I mean, I have a little bit of an advantage in that I'm on the phone with people, so I can feel when things shift. But that's something that before you even jump out and try a script, you might even, the next time you're on the phone, even with your friend or your husband or whatever, you might just feel into the call. Or if, you know, like people that have done my program, like Katie or at the home study, or Paula's in the program, Dana's in the program, you know, really the next time you're doing homework with one of the students, really just feel into the whole call. Like, where is this person and this animal now? So it's, you know, it's just a part of what I do for a living, so I'm used to it, and it's a great thing to just become aware of. And anytime you're on the phone, how is this person feeling? And you'll start to know when you're shifting something.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, great first call. Really excited about this group. And I'm hoping that some of the other really wonderful people that have signed up that I know through various other weekend classes. And we've got another Sharon that's taking my weekend class in Denver. And Jenny Smith is in the home study course right now. And yes, there's some really great people that are going to listen to this later, and connecting in on the Facebook group, it's going to be really important for everybody. So, okay. Thank you guys.
Thank you. What is
thank
the view?
You.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Joan.
Bye.
Joan,
bye.
Is there a special Facebook group for this?